Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello there, my very good friends. Andy here for What Culture. Just back seconds ago from Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor here in Philadelphia. Really strong night of professional wrestling. We're going to run through the show. We're going to review it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to have some fun. We're not going to go through the entire 0 hour pre-show. We're going to kick right off with the main card, given that most of the 0 hour was announced about 5 minutes before the show went on the air. But we're going to kick things off with the first match on the card, which was Kyle Fletcher defending the Ring of Honor Television Championship against Lee Johnson. These guys, I think somebody needs to take them aside and let them know that wrestling's actually supposed to be a little bit thick, because they knocked seven shades of sh out of each other. An incredibly impressive performance from both guys, really, because they're two young wrestlers very early on their development curve. Johnson in particular has been in the AEW system for pretty much since year one, maybe year two, whatever. He's obviously been under the wing of various people on screen, and now he's down in Ring of Honor. And he's come a long, long way from his early days when he was primarily booked as just a straightforward enhancement talent. While Kyle Fletcher is somebody that AEW clearly value, clearly see lots of potential in for the future, given the spots he's been placed in. But this was a total bomb fest, and in a way that was set aside from everything else on the card. These guys had no problem whatsoever laying every single thing in. Kyle was really convincing as like a domineering bully, almost veteran-like figure, which is kind of strange to say because I'm pretty sure he's like 24 years old. So insofar as someone of that age can behave like a veteran and a ring general, he did it. There was a really nasty reverse DDT on the apron at one point, leading to a 20 count tease, followed up by a 2.99999 count. And some real heart and mouth moment. If you were a miserable bugger, you might sit there and go, there was too many kickouts, whatever. But I'm not a miserable bugger most of the time. And the entire arena was enthralled by the bombs these guys were dropping on each other. Kyle Fletcher retained in the end, driving Lee Johnson's head just straight into the top of the turnbuckle. After just a series of escalating violence that had me wondering for the long-term health of both guys in the best way possible. It's a really easy up, if you can't tell from the tone that I'm describing this match. Up next was the Stardom Showcase match. Six-person tag, preceded by like a minute, two-minute long video package that kind of boots Stardom over as the best in-ring promotion in the world, which it probably is, and making full use of this relationship between the two companies that seemingly up until the Rossi Ogawa split from Stardom was a little bit dodgy. Tony Khan didn't leave much to the imagination with his tweets that went down in the wake of that. But ultimately, what this needed to do would be just a fun, exciting, explosive introduction to the style of the company, the pace of the matches, some of the personalities within it. You certainly get that with people like Tam Nakano and Mina Shirakawa in the match. And this was just really, really great. When you watch these wrestlers, and it's quite remarkable, everyone on that roster is of an incredibly high standard. You notice it not just in the big flashy moves, the flips and the power bombs and everything else. You notice it even in really simple things like the way two people bounce back across each other off the ropes and apply headlocks and counter out of moves. They work to an incredibly high standard, and this whole thing was just an incredible introduction to this style and to these people if you've never seen Stardom before. The whole thing kind of breezed by. It must have ran about 15 minutes. It felt like 1.5. And in the end, we had Queen's Quest throughout playing the heel role, engaging in a bit of skullduggery, building to Mina Shirakawa in particular, delivering just a fantastic babyface performance throughout. The Stardom situation in general brings up a lot of exciting possibilities around Forbidden Door and so forth. And it would be really nice to see this stuff transplanted onto AEW television as well. That'd be a really cool thing. People have been calling out for that for years. It's a bit silly that it hasn't happened yet. But again, look, you can probably infer this. It's an easy win. It's an easy up. Mariah May came down afterwards offering a glass of champagne, alluding to her former times over in Stardom. She previously competed on the pre-show, dressed as Toni Storm. You know the deal. You know the gimmick. But yeah, great times all around. And from there, we moved into the tag team title match. This was the Kingdom defending against the Infantry, who of course recently had that very strong outing against FTR in the AEW tag team title tournament. And this one, man, it got really nasty early on because the Kingdom, those buggers, decided, hey, Sean Dean, we're not going to let you wrestle. We're going to spike pile drive you on the ramp. Like straight away, really nasty stuff. From there, the Kingdom were in control for long, long portions, but we did have some comebacks. At one point, Sean Dean actually had a pin on Mike Bennett, but that bloody scamp referee was distracted, doing stuff on the outside with Matt Taven, who was, you know, playing, being a bugger. This led to Wardlow coming down, clotheslining Sean Dean, leading to the finish and a successful retention for the Kingdom. The crowd did not enjoy that at all, the dirty finish, but in a kayfabe kind of way, not in a this is BS kind of way. So it worked for what I was trying to do. The Kingdom are complete assholes and they should win like complete assholes. They should need a person like Wardlow to interfere on their behalf against a team like the Infantry, who are less established and on the rise in the company. It's another up. I mean, this show just was off to an incredible start. As these Ring of Honor pay-per-views often do. From there, we had Queen Aminata versus Billy Starks in one of the more creative matches on the card. This was the final of the Women's Television Title Tournament, and that has been playing out very successfully on Ring of Honor Television over the past few months. And they had a really impressive match. One of the most, I think, just exciting things about Queen Aminata in general is that I don't know if she's actually kicking the crap out of people or if she's just really good at hiding thigh slaps or whatever. But when she hits people, it looks and sounds like hell. She really throws everything behind her strikes, her slams, her suplexes, and all of that stuff. And Billy Starks, for somebody of her youth, is an incredibly adept pro wrestler. She has this kind of scrappiness to her that is a product of where she's at in her career, but it really works for her in a lot of ways. A lot of times, professional wrestling gets complimented for, like, wrestlers are slick and smooth and fluid and all of this stuff, but sometimes it should look a bit scrappy and a little bit ugly and like a struggle and like things aren't always supposed to be perfectly crisp and like some kind of dance routine or whatever. And that's what we had here. But the finish is what most people will be talking about. You might have seen the clip already, but if you didn't, there was a spot where Billy looked like she'd seriously hurt her neck. I mean, immediately the doctor was called in the ring, the referee was shooing Queen Aminata away. Within a few moments, we had another crew member coming in and fixing a neck brace around her. And it's like, oh my goodness, she's seriously hurt. She's not moving. Queen Aminata looks aghast that something she had done may have caused a potentially serious injury. And the entire arena was just hushed at this stage. It gets to the point where Billy's helped to her feet. Queen Aminata is holding the middle and top ropes open so that she can get out. At this point, my work senses started tingling a little bit because it's like, hold on, if she's got a neck brace on and they've not put her onto a stretcher, onto a gurney or whatever, that doesn't really seem like protocol. At this point, you wonder, is it a work? And at this point, you think the most obvious thing here, given that Billy has primarily played a babyface throughout her career, though she's been learning some dirty tricks from Athena, you'd think that Queen Aminata, when she's holding the ropes, would use this opportunity to strike her down, get the pin, and get a devious win. The opposite happened. Billy Starks, who has, like I said, learned a few things from Athena over the months and the years, beat the crap out of Queen Aminata, choked her out, and won the TV title. It was a really shocking twist that played out so effectively in the arena that I can't do anything but compliment it. It's nice when you see this kind of creative finish that feeds into a character transformation as well, a really subtle one, not just a sudden, haha, I'm a dickhead now, something that's played out over a prolonged period of time. Great stuff across the board. It's an op.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, next we move on to something that wasn't announced at all. Very, very surprised to see the Bang Bang Gang, Jay White, and the Guns come out at this point in the show. But they are the Ring of Honor Trios champions, so you can't hold that against them. They just turned up to work. It's fine. They got paid. They came out, they cut a promo. Jay White teed up a challenge. He said, "We are the best trio in the world. Nobody is as good as us. And to prove that, we're going to lay down an open challenge." Who's coming out? Lance Archer, accompanied by Alex Zane, which is interesting. They recently teamed together in New Japan Pro Wrestling, but they haven't done so in the Tony Khan verse as of yet. So here they are. He introduces Alex Zane, says, "This is my partner from Japan, yada, yada, yada. But hold on, we need another person to complete this trio. We can't just fight the two of you, the three of you as a duo. That wouldn't count." Here comes Minoru Suzuki. Just an eternal figure in these Tony Khan surprise spots. A former associate of Lance Archer in Suzuki-gun over in Japan. And they had kind of the quintessential modern Minoru Suzuki match in America. He's not going nuts anymore. This is a guy who's been doing this for a long, long time. But his aura and his presence carry him through. The Guns and Jay White looked like they were absolutely just completely terrified of this man as he rampaged around the ring, throwing chairs around in fits and stood there no-selling chops and sticking his tongue out like a maniacal old man that will rip your throat out. It was a great time. You know, you watch a match like this, you're not going to get incredible athleticism and all of this stuff. That's not to, criticize Minoru Suzuki. It's just where he's at in his career. The Guns were particularly great at hamming out. Austin is really good at being just a pain in the ass. And at this stage in his career, this is kind of a perfect place for him. But the Guns retained, of course. The Bang Bang Gang retained. Alex Zane eating the pinfall after a Blade Runner. This led to a post-match angle where the Acclaimed came down, of course, after Jay got on the mic again and said, "Hey, we're the best, blah, 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 blah." There was a moment where Billy Gunn was detained by security. Pretty difficult to enjoy a Billy Gunn angle after what we saw on this week's episode of Dynamite. But this was actually pretty effective. The security took Billy away. They held him back a little bit on the ramp. And that meant that Bowens ate a Blade Runner. They quickly rallied. Billy broke away from the security. Max Caster came back in and they chased the heels off. But that feud is set to continue. You know, not the most dazzling exhibition of pro wrestling in the world, but effective for what it was. It's another easy up. Look, 5-0. This is a good show. This is a good blooming show. Up next, right? Johnny TV versus Dalton Castle was one of the most unique wrestling matches I have seen all year. They started off by playing a vignette of the ongoing storyline. The storyline itself is weird, okay? Because they just let go of the boys, the custody of whom was a really important factor in all of this. And the real big reason why Dalton Castle was so angry and mad at this damn dastardly Johnny TV and Taya Valkyrie in the first place. But this video package built a really tangible sense of hatred. It gave the impression that as wacky as Dalton Castle is, he really wants to hurt this man. So we're going to have a fight without honor, and maybe we're going to see some real violence. That's not quite what we saw. If there was any tangible sense of hatred in that match from the video package, that kind of evaporated at the first bell, as they just kind of had a wrestling match. Which is kind of a shame, because when you do such an effective job of building that up, you want that theme to carry over into the match itself. Compared to the other bouts, it felt pedestrian, unfortunately. That's not to say that, you know, Johnny wasn't pulling off some amazing stuff and Dalton Castle wasn't just his weird, unique, charismatic, building, filling presence. But for the most part, something of a letdown given the strength of the storyline up to this point. Now, I will say, wrestling doesn't always make me laugh. I'm a bit of a grumpy bugger if you've never watched this channel before. However, there's a series in this match where Dalton Castle, who somehow has six boys now, brought out a procession of them one by one, and they got progressively larger and larger and larger. He would use them as a projectile. So one guy would come out, he'd throw them over the top rope onto Johnny TV. Another one onto Johnny. But then the big boys start coming out and it starts getting a little bit difficult. The punchline was that the last one was a large man, a gentleman of larger carriage who fell flat on his face. Good times, good times. Paul Walter Hauser showed up and that's when this thing just really went off the rails. Look, this is not the pro wrestling I enjoy. I laughed at the gag with the boys. I think that if you're super invested in this storyline, you know, you could probably forgive some of its slower moments and the Paul Waller Hauser stuff, which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, particularly as they tried to play off it as a disguise with his mask on, even though everyone knew who it was straight away. It's a very gentle down from me, unfortunately. But the show, fortunately, took a quick upturn from there because one of the most anticipated matches of the entire weekend was next. Hikaru Shida challenging Athena for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship. Athena came down the ring with an axe. I'm not really sure what she was planning on doing with that. I'm not sure decapitation would really have flown here. But this was another unique match on this card in that it did stuff that the other matches didn't do and they worked a limp. Early on, the story of this was that Athena was a bit intimidated, even for her heel characters, you know, this swaggering badass. She was a bit intimidated by the prospect of facing the kayfabe greatest AEW Women's Champion of all time. So she kept bailing out of the ring. She kept nervously feeling her way into the match and then just running away whenever it looked like she was threatened. That did a great job of establishing Shida as a tremendous threat to this long Ring of Honor Women's World Championship reign. But she found an opening to attack the knee through dastardly means, kept going to that throughout the match over and over and over. And after a bunch of matches that had largely revolved around throwing bombs, this was a really refreshing change of pace. They did some great stuff throughout with various kickouts. There was one moment where Athena, who is just a tremendous pro wrestling actress, had what looked like a surefire pinfall on Shida. She was pinning her with the hand tucked under the chin, big Cheshire Cat grin on her face. One, two, kick out, immediately turns to complete shock. And if you can pick up on something like that from the back of the arena, when there's no screens on showing the action, that's a great damn pro wrestler. But while it was kind of speculated that maybe Fina would lose the belt here and maybe move over to AEW brands on a more regular basis, that wasn't the case. She did score the victory with one final O-face that came following a previous kickout by Shida. A tremendous match across the board, very fitting of the reign in general. Another up, and we are at 6-1 heading into the main event. Mark Briscoe, Eddie Kingston, story of this one. I mean, you don't really need a recap for the prospect of Mark Briscoe winning the title potentially on the 11th anniversary of his brother first doing the same, the late, great Jay Briscoe. But this was, look, Tony Khan gets a lot of flack, right? And understandably so in a great many cases. Some people don't like the way he promotes professional wrestling. Some people don't like that he's a bit loose on Twitter or whatever, whatever. But the guy fundamentally understands that in the end, the nice thing is generally supposed to happen. And the nice thing happened here. There were some really nice touches throughout. I mean, bringing back Gimme Back My Bullets, one of the classic Briscoe Brothers theme songs for Mark's big moment. It's a really simple, small thing that might not make a great deal of difference, you know, overall. But it really does when you think about it and you compensate all these things and you think about everything that's happened to that family, not just in the past year and a bit since Jay tragically lost his life, but in the past 20 or so years that they've been active in this. Eddie played his role to perfection. The arena was really split early on because people love Eddie Kingston, but the Mark Briscoe story is really hard to root against. So Eddie had to make himself a complete asshole if he was going to turn that into complete support for Mark. Mark is going to be Mark. He is going to be one of the most likable, interesting, natural characters in pro wrestling, and he's going to wrestle that way. But Eddie had to flip it around a little bit, and he did just that. He bloodied him up. He beat the crap out of him at various points. I mean, there were some chop battles and strike battles here where, you know, you get the two types of connection. You get the slap, which always sounds great and fills the arena. But you also sometimes just get a dull thud where it sounds like just the sheer heft of two forces is colliding into each other with no extra thigh slap and none of that other stuff that, you know, jazzes it up a little bit. They really understood the assignment here. And, you know, with Pa Briscoe looking on from ringside and Mark finally calling for the Jay Driller and putting Eddie away and winning his first Ring of Honor world title on the 11th anniversary of his brother doing the same thing at Supercard of Honor. It's the kind of stuff that you watch this sport for in the first place. And after this happened, there was a streamer ticker serenade. Mark's family were in the ring, Pa Briscoe, all of his kids, and the Ring of Honor roster emptied out. And, you know, it's cool to see a bunch of old faces who were there all these years ago when, you know, him and Jay were killing it as a tag team. Colt Cabana was there, Christopher Daniels, Rhett Titus, Jay Lethal, who, of course, wrestled Mark just days after Jay passed away. Tony Khan came down to the ring. Afterwards, Mark Briscoe cut the most Mark Briscoe promo of all time. He just started dropping F-U-C-Ks all over the place, paying tribute to his brother. But yeah, the perfect emotional climax to this show. It was a very effective show. It's not, by the way, obviously, 7-1. That's our final tally. Boom, 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 boom. It, you know, if we were to go into nitpicks or whatever, we might say that the middle portion was a little bit fatty on this show and maybe that part dragged. But when you have bouts the quality of Athena versus Hikaru Shida and Mark Briscoe versus Eddie Kingston to write the course and end on a really positive note on, it's really hard to complain. But let me know what you thought of this show down in the comments section below. I'm Andy. I'm really keen to get to bed just like everyone else in this room is right now. So I'll see you later. Bye.